Hello, everyone. Welcome back. And we're going to hit on part two. There were just so many questions. I had to break it down into two parts. Okay, so what are your thoughts on sleep is the question. After suffering from insomnia for months and trying what felt like everything under the sun, my sleep is finally regular and deep again after starting to eat more densely and more throughout the day. Regular colonics are a part of my life, and I felt good during the daytime and perfectly content emotionally and physically with what I was eating. Now I'm eating more, definitely feeling more grounded, and sleeping beautifully, but miss some of the lighter high I felt when I wasn't focused on eating as much. Okay. Well, let's take this apart a little bit, because sleep is a really big issue. Because sleep is the time when we're most processing that which we need to process, be it mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, but mostly the physical stuff that we have to process. And I shouldn't say mostly, because there's so much mental stimulation that we need to process while we're sleeping, but nevertheless, that's why we have crazy dreams if we're overstimulated by life. But so sleep is the time, though, when your body's able to break down a lot of the stuff that you've been taking in during the day. So it needs that, the deeper and longer the sleep, the more thorough your processing is going to be. So it's really important. I know this isn't the question, but it's really important to get a lot of sleep. And the more you are stimulated, the more you consume, the more you're stimulated emotionally, the more you're stimulated mentally, the more sleep you're going to need. So when people get into this work and they say, okay, well, you don't really need much sleep because you're eating this high vibration food. Well, that can be true at first for most people because they're not used to having the intensity of the high frequency food in their body. So it's like getting, a jolt of fresh energy. But over time, as the body starts to take on the awake and release process, there's so much that goes on while you're sleeping. The body's going to take advantage of that. So it's like, okay, well, wow, not only am I getting this high energy food, but look what this high energy food in good combinations is enabling the body to do. It's enabling to start releasing and releasing and releasing. So it's almost like it's like a delayed processing. The stuff you never got to process back when you consumed it can then now in this awake and release present day cleansing scenario start to be processed. So ultimately, if you're deep tissue cleansing, you're going to need a lot of sleep. So don't buy into that I need 5 hours of sleep kind of thing. You know, it's that's not for people who are doing a lot of deep cleansing. That's for, I don't know, maybe somebody's gone from burgers to raw food in the first couple months, it might feel like that. But this is a long journey. This is the deep stuff. We're cleaning up house for not just even this lifetime, but the lineage process. So the inheritance that our family over multiple generations gave us. So that's important to know about sleep. So it sounds like eating more is helping this individual fall asleep, which is not surprising because you've all heard the term food coma. And that's, you know, the one of the reasons I love not eating during the day, and that's not for everybody, I want to underscore, is because I don't like anything to interfere with the conductivity of my primal force during the day. So it's like supercharged. And the second I consume something other than green juice, because green juice is giving you a straight shot of electromagnetic power straight to the bloodstream without needing to be digested, but anything that requires digestion is going to slow you down if you're very high. Now, if you are needing the stimulation because your body's used to stimulation and you don't have that stimulation, then you're going to feel low until you eat. That's the other side of the game. But once you get clear, the second you take something in, you're going to feel less energized. So it's, you know, going back to her question here, let me just make sure I don't get too off track. So she's eating something and it's making her tired. And it's making it's like a lullaby, you know, it's putting her to sleep. It's switching down her energy. So what else could be done to switch down the energy? Well, if you want to do it from a chemical standpoint, there's the natural herbs. I know when I say chemical can be herbs because chemicals are just, you know, it's the molecular structure that makes, you know, changes the chemical makeup of something. So, you know, valerian root tea, or Gosh, yeah, there are lots of combinations, chamomile blends and things you can try, long baths. But really, what needs to happen is there needs to be some kind of processing before sleep, because it's almost like, you know, if you, that's a good analogy, if you take some dental floss or string or something, and all day long it's getting gnarled up and gnarled up and gnarled up, and during sleep, your being is ungnarling, is detangling all of that. So if you can do a little bit of that detangling first, you'll go into a state of sleep that's going to be much more effective, because it can get to deeper detangling, not just the superficial detangling that maybe you were able to do just by sitting in a bathtub and breathing, maybe evaluating some of the things, the emotions, the stimulation you were exposed to that day, thinking about maybe how some of your relationships went that day, or maybe how something went in the boardroom or in the classroom. Just kind of take things apart a little bit. We move, we jump, we jump, we jump. Next thing, next thing, next thing. I'm guilty of this myself. I have such a busy life. And, you know, it's going from the preschool to the big kids stuff, to rugby practice for my son, or, you know, the tutor. I mean, there's a million things going on at any given time. Plus, you know, all the meals everyone needs to eat. And then there's the social things and the business demands, and there's taxes. I mean, it's like, you guys know the story. It's never ending. So if you don't take a moment to just go in between things, just at some point during the day, maybe once, okay, it's a great start, but if you can do it 2, 3, 4 times where you just take inventory, you collect yourself, you release anything that you feel is kind of stuck on you that hasn't left from maybe, you know, 3 meetings ago or something, you know, just make sure things aren't accumulating in your field. Your sleep will be much more efficacious. So, you know, this need for a lullaby, because that's what the food is, this need for something to bring you down. Down meaning energetically, kind of to make you kind of sedated, right? That's really what it is. It's a sedation. 24 hours ago. Oh, okay. it's this kind of need to calm down, really. And the food is helping her calm down in a way that she could actually help herself calm down, if she were to, you know, light a fire, breathe, have a cup of tea, do something else that's going to bring things down. So, you know, try not to reach for food as your sedation tool. But if you are going to do that, obviously it's great that she's conscious of it and she sees that she's doing it. But then she's missing that lighter feeling, that energized feeling, that primal force that you want to feel, and that will ignite you to carry on and really help you get what this is all about. So I would say, you know, be conscious of it. Try and find other things to calm you down. Know that deep sleep is really important. But if you're overeating to get that deep sleep, then your deep sleep is going to be used up just in the processing of the big meal you ate. So you're not actually going to get the benefit of the sleep. And you might actually, you know, ultimately, you're not going to get the rest you need if you're having to work on breaking out a big meal at night. Now, having said that, my main meal is dinner, and I love a big dinner. So, you know, but, you know, we make friends with our limitations sometimes too. So, you know, if there are other ways that you can rectify things that are out of alignment in your life first, and maybe save that for later, that's one of the last holdouts for a lot of people. A lot of people find it easy to clean up their act in other areas of their lives, other areas of their life, I should say, multiple lives. And they find it easy to eat lighter during the day, light hours rather than the nighttime. It's often a last holdout, but make the effort to calm yourself down. It's really important so that you don't need the food to sedate you. Okay. Next question. Okay. In a clean celled body, what is the healthy menstrual cycle like? I love that question. For instance, the level of flow and duration of the cycle. I've read and heard Natalia speak about the cycle reflecting previous month's level of toxicity, so I'm really interested to know how a healthy system functions. Also, in regard to the cycle, is discharge for a woman normal, or does it indicate toxicity? And what kind of hygiene products would Natalia recommend, tampons or otherwise? Oh, I hope she says these are not inappropriate questions. Absolutely not. Bring it. Okay, very, very good. So yes, it is the case that the cycle does reflect on the previous month's level of toxicity. So if you are, say, okay, let's just say for argument's sake, it's May 28th and your cycle is due. What did you do from, you know, April 29th or, you know, whenever you let your last cycle started till then? It's going to be that the experience you're going to have with your cycle is going to reflect that. So if a relatively clean celled, conscious eating, conscious cleansing woman is going to have a month of a bit of indulgence, she's going to really see it when the cycle comes up. So whereas a truly healthy, clean celled woman's cycle should be uneventful. Literally, it's like the blood just appear and it'd be like, wow, oh wow, I was expecting my period, I guess that makes sense. The non-cleansed celled woman is going to, as we know the story, the whole PMS thing, it's going to mount and mount and mount and mount, and then she's going to have a freak out and her body's going to bloat. This is all probably like 5 to 7 days before she even has her period. And you know, the face is going to erupt maybe, or the weak spot in the body, whether it's the throat or the head or something's going to happen. And the cellulite's going to pop out, you know, a whole lot more, and the depression's going to kick in, and you know, and all the grisly stuff happens. And that's like 1 week of the month, which is absolutely unacceptable. So take that woman then who's not so clean-celled, and even if she's not doing things perfectly, if she's making progress, she's going to have a easier and easier cycle as she goes. Even if what she's doing is significantly less high vibration than the woman who's been clean-celled, who's just messing up a little bit. Because, you know, you start to pay for your sins much worse when you get cleaner. But it is really cool that you can watch it like that. And in terms of, let's see, am I answering this properly? In terms of discharge for women. Okay, so discharge is not normal unless you are, let me put it this way. It's not normal for a clean-celled woman. Once you've achieved a state of clean cells and tissues, which takes a long time, okay, I'm not saying like after even a year of cleansing, you can, your body's going to expunge. It's going to purge out everything that it doesn't want if it's given the conditions to do so. You're giving the body the conditions. So if you're giving the body conditions and you're having discharge, it's because your body's still releasing stuff. If you're not giving your body the conditions and you're getting discharged, it's because you have an overflow of toxicity and your body's going to release it from every orifice it can. But the fact that there is discharge indicates a release of substance that is not not in harmony with a clean-celled woman. Or that's a bad way of putting it. It's not going to happen to a clean-celled woman. Let's put it that way. So when you've gotten to the point where you're a clean-celled woman, you're not going to have discharge. Maybe that's the best way of stating it. But up until that point, you might, and knowing why you're having it is really helpful. So if you're deep tissue cleansing and everything's coming out of everywhere, you know, remember, I mean, I think of the gynecologist and the dentist as pretty much the same thing. I mean, in the sense that you have this orifice that's expunging all day long. It's all, our body's made up of cells and tissues. Our mouth is cells and tissues. Our flower is cells and tissues. So it's, you know, if you don't brush your teeth, you're going to have gross stuff in your mouth. If your body is trying to release things that were never meant to, you know, get into the cells and tissues so close to the ovaries and fallopian tubes to begin with, then, you know, it's going to try and get rid of it given half a chance. You're giving it more than half a chance. So if it's showing up, that's why. Okay. It could also be, okay, wait, two other things. Hold the show. it could be that you're engaging sexually with a man who is not as clean as he should be. So if he's releasing his fluids into you and you're having a discharge and you know you're a clean-celled woman, so what's going on here? It's because your body is, let's like be gentle on him here, but it's rejecting his fluids. It's saying, no, thank you. You know, this is giving me a kind of a low grade, response, kind of just giving an indication that this is not so good to have in my body. So let's see. The other thing is the hygiene products. So if you're using something that either is toxic or is purporting not to be but actually is, then you may have issues. Or if you're a really healthy, clean-celled woman and you're using tampons too regularly, because the body does not want its flow to be obstructed. Now and then, I understand there's a time and a place for these, but most young women now, sadly, use tampons as their regular go-to, as opposed to the thing they use, when they're wearing something that needs it, or if they're going to the ocean or something, the swimming pool. It's not to be used as the go-to. So that could also cause it. What kind of hygiene products? Okay, so I'm going to tell you something funny. Everything to do with this is pretty funny, especially just because, we're so out of touch with the way we would be caring for ourselves 10,000 years ago, but or this sort of thing. First of all, periods should be, in a clean-celled woman, super, super light, super short duration, super uneventful. So, very nice, light pink, light bright red, never this kind of dark saturated red, never very, very dense in color. Should all be kind of like happy colors, happy pink, happy red. Okay, that's the way I would look at it. Most women, because they're releasing toxicity through their menstrual blood, it's a purging process, you'll get kind of a blackish red, which I know it sounds pretty revolting, or like a purplish red. You don't want that. So when you can watch your color over the years. Like if you're a 25, 35-year-old woman and you're starting the process, this deep tissue cleansing process, you're going to see that the color of your menstrual blood is significantly different. The smell of it is going to be significantly different in 5 years' time. It's amazing. It'll lighten. It will. But there'll be this process. In a sense, I often say it is linear, in the sense that in 5 years' time you are going to be stratospherically better off than you are now. But there are times when things kind of loop around, and it can almost feel like. Like you're not making progress, but you really are. So, for example, you might see a lot of progress in your menstrual cycle, and then suddenly, your body's gotten to a point where it wants to do a really big house cleaning because you've given it such an opportunity. You've created such great conditions for that. And so you have this very tough period that comes up that month. Don't think, oh my gosh, I'm just back to square one because my period is like it was 2 years before. Not if you're doing everything right. If you're doing everything right, it's because your body's onto something, and then the next month it won't happen again. It might happen once a year like that, just because your body's trying to take advantage of the elimination that can be had through that area. It's exciting stuff. I mean, if you think about taking an orchid and exposing it to Chernobyl versus taking other organs in your body that are just hardier and expose them to something that's less offensive, maybe. That's what we're talking about. When you think about all the ovaries, the uterus, the fallopian tubes, the cervix, it is an orchid. It is so delicate. It is the tissues there are different. There's so much sensitivity. There has to be. You know why? Because it's all about the progeny. It's all about the next generation. So if a woman's reproductive organs are exposed to toxicity, what the body's supposed to do is prevent fertility. It's supposed to say, hang on, if this woman gets pregnant and she's toxic like this, the next generation is going to be sort of down the rung rather than up the rung. And so we don't want to have that, because we know that life is centripetal. It's implosive. It's evolutionary. And that's the evolution, the upward spiral is internal. It's the strengthening. It's the conservation of energy. And the devolution is the spreading out, is the going from order to chaos. So this would take a woman who's exposed her reproductive organs to toxicity is taking order to chaos. And that is antithetical to life. So this is why it's just so important that we allow ourselves the opportunity to deep clean and to significantly deep clean before we decide to have children. It's really big. I mean, it wasn't as essential a few thousand years ago, a few hundred years ago, 100 years ago. Your great-grandmothers were, they were they're going to be all right. Like, their offspring was going to be okay. We're exposed to things from every angle that's not okay on any level. And it's certainly not okay for the reproductive organs. So this indication of, I suppose the biggest indication we're seeing is infertility. And yet we're trying to push against it and say, no, 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 but hang on. I'm sure I can be fertile. Just, you know, give me the chemicals, give me the drugs, give me the injections, the hormones. Do we want to do that? Do we want to defy nature? It's, you know, anyway, that's, I suppose, rhetorical or not. okay, but I was going to tell you something funny. All right. When I was about 12, 13 years old, I got my period, and it was no fun shake. I mean, I was beside myself that women actually, that was like my fate, that for the next, I suppose at 12, I was thinking, all right, so next, like, who knows, like 30, 40 years, I have to deal with this horrible thing every month. I mean, I couldn't, it was like a bad dream, certainly a bad joke. But the worst part of the joke was when my mother proceeds, because granted, like, this 12-year-old, and I blame it on lineage, you know, had a fairly uncomfortable menstrual experience. It was very heavy. I'm sure that's more than you needed to know, but, you know, you did ask me this question, and this is not the place for censoring. And so she pulls out these, like, old-fashioned sanitary napkins that require a belt that you, like, pull the thing through. What are they? The old Kotex. They're so thick, and they're just enormous, and, you know, you have to wear some sort of a big skirt or something to even be able to walk around in this thing. But so this is, I guess, what I'm getting at is that the evolution of my own body having a heavy release is a very complicated experience with the menstrual cycle and those ridiculous Kotex, which actually, you know, were kind of interesting, you know, because the way they hooked in almost was more comfortable than the pads that came later. But I'm not going to spend too much time dwelling on the benefits of pads and Kotex. It's just that I don't need them, and I don't need anything remotely like that. I haven't for a decade, at least. I would say for the last 15 years, it wasn't long after I got into cleansing that the period shifted. And all I use, and again, this is you know, an intimate conversation we're having, but what the heck, I just use organic toilet paper because I don't have that much. I mean, it gets light. It's what happens. You just, you know, here's what happens. First of all, it gets light. Secondly, your release happens when you use the loo. It doesn't, you know, if you're attentive and in the flow and you're not sitting for long periods of time and avoiding going to the bathroom when you should go to the bathroom, then you're going to go to the loo because your body says, you know, it's time to go, and you're going to release a lot of blood, and then you're going to put a little, you know, as I do, a little sort of compilation of organic toilet paper in my panties. So that's all it takes. Girls, really, I mean, it's you use the organic stuff, you know, as long as you need to, but the goal is not to have to wear pads and depend on all this stuff. You know, I have a box of organic tampons I keep around in case I need them on the off chance, but I hardly ever use them. I probably would use, I don't know, maybe 10 a year, really, like maybe less. I don't know. I always think, well, I should have these around a problem. I'm going to need one. I don't know. It's very, very rare. But that's me, and that's where I've come. Wherever you are in the journey, just make sure you're not using anything that has chemicals in it, and that is, you know, going to obstruct your flow, most importantly. So let's see here. Next question. That was a fun one. Okay, what's next for us? Can Natalia speak about her thoughts on fermented foods and broths and their role in aiding the healing of the gut? Does she believe it is beneficial for leaky gut issues, and does she have any other suggestions to help heal the gut if it is in trouble other than these? Okay, so we addressed fermented foods already. Let's talk about broths. Okay, so broths are great They're great because they're a neutral and they're filling and they're comfort food, and they fill a kind of a category of kind of a sensory experience for the body. And so I think for that reason they should be spotlighted. You know, I think it's really great. I mean, people get very excited about bone broths and this stuff. And, you know, if you're getting, I don't like to take the essence of an animal, because you're taking that essence into your body, and depending on all the factors of what they were exposed to. Remember we talked about sleep and how you have to process all this stuff during sleep? Well, when you take something into your body, you have to process everything so the biomass and the components of that substance. So on the one hand, people get excited about bone broth because it's supposed to confer into the broth all the qualities of the of its original substance, this you know, healthy strong bone, as far as we know. But if we go further and we see how the animal is raised, everything, that whole animal's experience, is going to be embedded in the bone. So, you know, if you know you're getting like this amazing buffalo bone from Montana, and it was, you know, you can do that. I'm not going to say don't. From a digestive standpoint, it won't be a bad thing. From an animal rights perspective, that's a different story. There's so many different ways to look at it, but you bring your desire of what you want to get out of this information. You know, you pull out what you need. But in terms of broth, like vegetable broth, I love vegetable broth. I cook with it a lot. It makes a great base for soups, or just in that nice consommé experience, which is also very nice, just to be able to have some broth, for example, when you're fasting, juice fasting, and having the vegetable broth with that. It's very, very helpful. But is it beneficial for leaky gut? Okay, so what you want to know for things like leaky gut is that whether it's diverticulitis or Crohn's or leaky gut or any of these IBS falling under the IBS umbrella, you want really soothing foods. So it's not that it's healing leaky gut because there's something special in broth that's going to heal leaky gut. It's that because the gentler of sort of a day in the life of intake you can have, cooked vegetables, blended pureed vegetable soups, broths are all going to be go-tos. Oh, we have a visitor. Stuka's come to visit. I think he wants to be fed. Speaking of, I think he heard me talking about bone broth. I think you like that idea. Yep, I know you did. Okay, we may have to do a part three of this. But basically, those soothing foods are like a salve to the intestine, like aloe is. Yes, I'm coming. He starts to say mom after a while, so mom. I think I need to go to my little baby here. I'm going to come back, but I think, you know, I think we've wrapped this question there. It's helpful in many levels, but don't fall into the trap of like, what's in it? Is that thing going to heal my gut? It's eating the soothing foods or easily digested is what's going to heal the gut. But as you move out the waste, always very important. And there are great colon hydrotherapists out there, especially the old ones that trained with Gil Jacobs in the old days, who are spread all over the States now, who work with people with intestinal issues all the time. Okay. And you guys, we're going to wrap for now. And we're going to do part three. All right. That was lots of fun. To be continued.